Packer fans, welcome into the Green 19 podcast. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, and the Green Bay Packers just took us all on a bit of a Christmas journey, defeating the Carolina Panthers, but needing a very late field goal from Anders Carlson. Some good fortune, quite honestly, to prevail 33-30. They do keep their tenuous playoff hopes alive, so it counts as a Christmas gift, I guess, under the tree for Packers fans. More of a, I don't know, ugly sweater or fruitcake or something, because the much maligned defense had more problems. They lost a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter. Nearly lost its three-point lead with 20 seconds to go, but Carolina couldn't stop the clock, ran out of time, couldn't set up a 48-yard field goal, and the Packers escaped. Much to discuss this week with two guys who were there to see it, PackersNews.com reporters Tom Silverstein and Pete Doherty. Gentlemen, this is not the first time in December that an opposing quarterback has had pretty much a career day. Carolina's Bryce Young, 23 of 36, 312 passing yards, two touchdowns, easily his biggest passing game of the year. He's the number one pick after all, but this is a Panthers team that came in 2-12 with very little to hang its hat on. And the Packers were kind of lucky, I think, to escape. So Tom, I'll start with you because you wrote about the defense, which was obviously the storyline coming into the week. And you wrote about the players and kind of what did and didn't happen. If it comes down to, again, the coordination, Joe Barry, we saw some blitzing. We saw some changes, but, kind of the same results. So I guess just give me your overall feel of how you think the defense did, where maybe culpability lies and what it was that made this game such a slog for Packers, the Packers to finally to seal off.
Yeah, I was telling Pete on the way out of the stadium that I still have it in my head that they lost just because, the way Carolina came back and scored the touchdown and then got the two-point conversion, it just felt like, they had just beaten the Packers based on the two rallies. I mean, three touchdowns in the second half, all long drives. Their last three drives were like, I think they totaled 164 or 146 yards. And it was just, it was domination. They ran out of time. That's the only reason the Packers didn't lose was they ran out of time. And I don't know what happened. They had a good first half. They blitzed Bryce Young all over the place. They forced him into some bad throws. He missed some throws. Then they come out in the second half, and they kind of had some answers. And, the first drive, they kind of dinked and dunked, and then they started to open it up, and Packers went back to playing some zone, and they got scorched on some zone plays. So I don't know. It was sort of kind of like, you paint a dilapidated room, with new paint, and boy, it looks shiny for a while. And then, it's still the old dilapidated room. Easy for me to say.
Yes, dilapidated. And the Panthers, I don't think they had a touchdown from 10 yards out since October 8th, since one of the early weeks of the season. They had three of them in this game, 30 points, a season high. They'd only cleared 20 points three times. So Pete, a lot of people are still going to be talking about Joe Barry and whether or not he's going to have a job this time next week. And obviously I would assume so, because he still had a job from the Tampa Bay game into this week. But Do you see any more changes? They did some personnel tweaks. Anthony Johnson started at safety over Rudy Ford, so there's at least that. But do you imagine that gets explored this week? Or how would you, I guess, is there a way to fix the defense? How would you fix the defense if you could?
Well, I would have made the change at coordinator. I don't know if that would have fixed anything or not, but it would have sent a message to everybody in the football organization, especially the players. Hey, your play cost, your coordinator's job. And there's still games to play, so that might have gotten some people's attention. I don't know how much they can fix. The one thing is, we've seen it with this team for sure, and you see it around the league. You can play bad for a while, but it doesn't mean you'll play bad every week. And they played terrible on offense in October, then they came back and played pretty well for five games, won four or five. And then struggle against the Giants. And, now they picked it up against the offense the last 2 weeks, especially this week. So, the defense could come out and get some turnovers against Minnesota and win, but it is hard to see them holding down teams to win both of these last two games. I mean, you wouldn't bet on it. You know, if they won, I don't think any of us would be shocked, right? I mean, it's not like Minnesota and Chicago are world beaters, but the Bears are playing better. So I still think it'll be a struggle to win both of these two, which is what they'll need to do for the playoffs. But I don't know I don't know that there are any big fixes other than, you know, getting a couple turnovers and, you know, there's skill and scheming and all that creates turnovers, but there's a little luck in that stuff too. So, you know, maybe just a couple good bounces of the ball like they got against Detroit with Goff coughing the ball up could be the difference.
Yeah, Nick Mullins, the Minnesota quarterback that they'll see next week, had a great passing day today, but also four interceptions, one at the end of the game that gave Detroit the win. And he's sort of an adventure too. So like you said, they could beat the Vikings and Bears. Their playoff chances are still really good if they beat the Vikings and the Bears, really good if they win both those games. Tom, you've talked about when Jaire Alexander comes back, that you weren't positive it would be a wholly good thing because they were getting success out of Carrington Valentine and Corey Ballantyne. And now not only is he back, but Eric Stokes now for the second week is back. And it didn't really feel like a whole lot had changed. It was an interesting day for Alexander. And you can even talk a little about the coin toss and what happened there, because that is that's a wild near turn of events, near disaster. That would have been an all-time moment, I think, in Green Bay Packers history, I think. So what did you see from Alexander now that he's back? Did he look healthy to you? Did he make a difference? Are the Packers better off having these guys in there after they've been hurt all year?
Well, they're better off having Jaire Alexander when he's healthy. And he's, you know, this is his first game back, and you've got to play through rust. And to me, he looked like a guy who, you know, he could run, do all the things he normally did, except tackle and use his arm. He looked a little reluctant, I think, at times to use his arm. He definitely gave up some, you know, tackles. But, you know, he also stripped what's his name across the middle? God, I'm tired. Chark, I think, across the middle on that fumble. He got beaten man-to-man, just like Eric Stokes did. Eric Stokes gave up two touchdowns in man-to-man coverage. His coverage wasn't horrible, but, you know, maybe 3, 4, or 5 weeks of playing from now, he plays those better. I don't know. I thought, you know, going after Bryce Young was the right thing to do with Alexander and Stokes back. But ultimately, there's just, you know, there's something wrong with that defense. And, you know, Carolina figured out whatever it was because, you know, they get shut down in the first half and then they come out in the second half and you know, kind of blow the Packers away. So I think it was okay to play Alexander, and they're just lucky that coin flip still went their way.
Yeah, so to review, he went out there. He's from Charlotte, so it seems like he invited himself into the captain's coin flip thing.
He was the fourth. You know, they say three's a crowd. Well, he was four. You know, four's a crowd.
And he's a big enough personality for, you know.
Nobody, you know, LaFleur, I don't think, knew. He didn't really answer it, the question when Pete asked him. But I don't think he expected him to go out there, let alone make the call. And then when he makes the call, he doesn't tell the referee that we're going to defer. He tells them we want to play defense, which if he had taken it technically, you know, that's a choice, and their choice would have been to kick off. And so Carolina would have had the choice in the second half, and they could have received, and they would have received in both halves. So I don't know what to say about him. You know, at some point, the thing is with him, I'll just make this one point. At some point, his play has to overshadow the knucklehead stuff that he does. You know, it's like if his play ever drops to a point where, you know, they start thinking, is this worth it? You know, they'll let them go or trade them or whatever. But right now, you know, the potential of his play allows them or forces them to put up with some of that.
Yeah, he definitely said that he invited himself out there. So that was not planned at all. And I think LaFleur was right, though, because when he said, so he talked to the refs, to the ref before the game and told them, if we win the toss, we are deferring. Mm-hmm. So I think that trumped, because the NFL doesn't want games. You know, it goes back to that, you know, there's been a, like that, remember the heads tails thing? You know, I can't even remember who was playing in that game, how many years ago.
Pittsburgh. Jerome Bettis, yeah. I think.
Yeah, there you go.
And Detroit.
Yeah, and so they don't want these games decided by stupid protocol stuff at midfield. They want these things, you know, to be clean and, you know, not have somebody's dumb mistake out there make a difference in a game. So LaFleur going to the refs before the game and saying, hey, if we win the toss, we're deferring, that trumped anything Alexander said. And it did. I didn't notice it, but talking to other reporters, it sounded like the ref said, so Alexander goes, we want our defense out there. We want to play defense, whatever it was. And it sounds like he said, and then a couple of reporters I talked to thought they heard that the ref said, you want to defer. And then he said, yes. So, because technically they wouldn't have to do that. But I think LaFleur talking to the ref before the game set it up so that his discussion with the ref before the game trumped Alexander not having any idea what he was doing out there.
For the high school football players out there, there is a huge difference between saying defer and defense. Oh my gosh, it's night and day.
Oh yeah.
Sorry, Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, LaFleur said that they've had this, he's heard of this problem happening before. So let's just say that the best coaching move of the night was him telling the officials before the game that they wanted to defer if they won the toss.
Packers scored on each of their first four offensive drives, including that one to start the game. That was, I think, their best start of the season, best start in a long time. And they didn't end up scoring off the first drive of the second half, but obviously it would have been a disaster if they had kicked off on both halves. But Pete, to touch on the offense, this was another good game. I mean, you can't dispute it. 33 points against any NFL team. And the big thing is Aaron Jones. This is really the first time we've seen him flash this way this season, where he appears fully healthy. He had 82 yards in the first quarter. That was already his biggest rushing performance in a game this season. You got to go back to midway through last season to see a performance with this many yards rushing overall. So he was definitely a factor and probably, I think you could argue, maybe the difference in the game when it comes down to it, 21 carries for 127 yards. Is it as simple as a guy who looked healthy? I mean, that's kind of what I saw on my TV screen, but was it more complicated than that, or was that just what you saw from Aaron Jones?
I don't think so, Jay. That's what I saw on the field is he's just basically really close to full health. And, you know, really it was the best he'd looked since the opener. And He's still a really good player, and he can be the engine that, you know, makes life a lot easier for Jordan Love. I think that's one of the reasons Love was so efficient. I mean, I think Jones had the touch on the first four plays, three runs and a pass, and then they hit, you know, they had him look and run, and they hit Tucker Kraft on a, I don't know, it was a 15 or 20 yard gain. And that, I think it was 20 plus actually. And that got him in the red zone for that first score. And he's just, you know, the difference between him and A.J. Dillon, and Dillon has his place, you know, as a power runner, but he's a lot more limited than Jones. And the difference just jumps off the field with some of the sharp, quick cuts that Jones makes. And, you know, if they're going to win these last two, he's probably going to have to play a really big role. I mean, considering they didn't have Watson or Reed, if they had not had Jones in this game, it's really hard to see how they would have won it. So this is a guy they can, and they're going to have to lean on heavily. You know, I didn't get into it in the column I wrote, because I wrote about the offense, but in their second to last series, he knocked off a 6-yard run on the first play, and he came out. And I remember thinking, well, why are they taking him out? And they ended up having a three and out because he was on the bench for the next two plays. But it sounds like I asked LaFleur about it, and he said that Jones took himself out, that he took a really good hit, and he just needed to kind of gather himself. So he took himself out. So they need to get – I think he's only played more than 40 snaps. I think it was only once this year so far, maybe twice. They need him to be able to play 40-plus snaps, and really – they're playing for their playoff lives these last two games. If I'm them, I'm playing him. I'm trying to get him up to 75% of the snaps, if at all possible. Because when he's on the field, they are so much better. And I'm sure you can find if we go through all the teams in the league, there's teams where when this guy is in, their offense is so much better. And he just seems to make a huge difference in the Packers' offense. Because of the plays he makes and the threat he poses and the way defenses have to change to play him. Now, doesn't mean when he's in there, everything always goes great. They can have three and outs with him in there. But they're just, over the course of 60 minutes, if he's out there for a lot of snaps, they are a noticeably better offense, and I'm sure it makes life easier on Jordan Love.
Big day for the offensive line, too. Sorry, go ahead.
I agree with that completely, only I would push back on all the snaps he plays, because – he's never been a guy who's played a whole, the whole game. He's always shared the duties, kind of with Jamal Williams, and then now it's been Dylan. And I just get the feel with him that, you get him, if you can get him 17 to 20 carries or touches, that's a good thing. But I thought he still, they rested him a little bit, gave Dylan the ball some. And I thought he looked fresher in the fourth quarter than he did in this last game. And I wonder if it's just if it is a smart thing to, not give him huge amounts of time off, but not push him too much, because he seems to be his quality is better than his quantity sometimes.
Yeah. And I wholeheartedly agree with that, like long haul stuff. Now I looked, and in the last 4 years, he had 40 or more 40 or more snaps in anywhere from 7 to 9 games each season. And I think it was either one or two so far this season. And I agree completely. When you're starting to see, he's historically been a 60% snap guy, and that's where he should be, because he's a small back and he gets hurt. He gets these soft tissue injuries. He's had how many MCLs has he had in his career already? I think he's up to 4 now. So I agree wholeheartedly, but he's getting near the end of the line. They're fighting for the playoffs. There's 2 games left. At this point, the gloves come off, the chains come off. He's got to, in my mind, I get it. You do need him fresh in the fourth quarter, but in my mind, I'm just putting him out there and playing him and taking my chances. Cause they can make the playoffs, and that would be, they're not going to win the Super Bowl if they do. But as Tom has noted multiple times in our conversations and in his columns, making the playoffs would help this team so much, just to get another week of practice, and they get to play in a real playoff game. What valuable experience for all those, for Jordan Love and for all those first and second year guys at receiver and tight end. So, I totally get what you're saying, and maybe you're right, and they'll play him. If they tried to play him that much, he ends up getting hurt by the fourth quarter. But with 2 games left, I'm taking that chance.
Yeah, and the Packers, again, if they win these final 2 games, I really think they're going to go to the playoffs. But if they lose either one, the odds are – there is a scenario, but the odds are almost – they're minuscule. It's pretty much win these last 2. And honestly, I think if you win these last 2, it's going to take a lot going wrong for them to not get that opportunity. So, and you mentioned – Jordan Love had a really good game, missing a lot of these key contributors. Obviously, Jaden Reed didn't play in this game, injured. Christian Watson was out for another game. AJ Dillon was there with a busted thumb. You lost Ontavian Wicks halfway through this game, so he's getting big time production out of Romeo Doubs, who had the big touchdown, huge catch that kind of saved their bacon. 4 catches, 79 yards and a score. Tucker Kraft has a huge day. Bo Melton with 4 catches and 44 yards. What a day. But Jordan Love is at the heart of it. And you can't lose sight of this big picture, that even contending for a playoff spot is as good as I think Packers fans realistically could have hoped for. I mean, he's been really good. And I tell you what, when he scrambles out of pressure, he's downright exciting because you know he's going to find somebody. You know he's going to be collected like he was on one of his touchdown throws today. So he's still continuing to impress me. So Tom, just I don't know. I didn't even see what Jordan Love said. If he spoke after this game, I assume so. What he thought about, you know, trying to fight through this without any of his major weapons. I mean, it seems like it's just another notch in his belt.
Yeah, he's pretty unfazed about pretty much everything. You know, you ask him about all these emotional highs and lows and, you know, all these adverse situations. And he's, you know, it's almost like nothing really bothers him much. And I think it's his personality. That's just who he is. And I think, you know, what stood out to me about this game was, and offensively I'm talking about, is, you know, Jones was, again, he's the engine, you know, he really is. But there's also, you have to have a certain amount of big plays, like, you know, plays that, where whatever you're doing is better than what the other team is doing. And I'm talking about physically. So Dobbs going and get that ball, you know, thrown down the left sideline. That throw to Tucker Kraft, I have no idea how Love got that between two guys. The Dontavian Wicks reading that play on the touchdown, apparently they had a blown assignment, he said, and they had a bunch of guys grouped together. And he turned around and saw Love was sort of going to the right, so he said, well, I'm going to follow him to the right. And sure enough, he got himself open. So you got to have plays like that. Players win games, and you know, schemes are great, but players really win games. And every week you're starting to see someone, and sometimes someone different, make plays. And Bo Melton was part of that today too.
Yeah, you know, on that, you brought up the touchdown to Wicks. So that was a third and eight, I think.
Mm-hmm. First play of the fourth quarter. Or no, sorry. Yeah, my fault.
So he breaks out of the pocket. And I don't know how well you can see it on TV because I don't know how far back the camera was. But, you know, up in the press box, I mean, there was nothing but green ahead of him. I'm pretty sure he could have run fairly easily for that first down. But he kept his eyes downfield, and Wicks was, you know, reasonably open, and he threw a dart on the run and hit him. And Wicks took that shot, but I mean, he was open. So I mean, you're right when you were talking about JR about him, you know, making plays out of the pocket, and I mean, he's got, you know, that's the kind of stuff. I'm not saying he's Rodgers or Favre, but that's the kind of stuff those guys did all the time. And if, you know, to most of the good quarterbacks in this league are able to do those kind of things. I mean, I still, you know, if he throws an incompletion there, you're going, well, what are you doing? You could easily run for it. But he threw a dart and the guy was open and they got the touchdown because he kept his eyes downfield. And I mean, one thing you got to say about this guy is, you know, he's a decent athlete. I don't think he runs any better than Rodgers did at the same age. It's not like he's Lamar Jackson or anything, but he runs okay. But he wants to play quarterback. He wants to throw the ball. He wants to make plays with his arm, not as, you know, much more than his feet.
I really thought that bomb to Romeo Doubs on his 36 yards, the last drive that sets up the go-ahead field goal, I really thought that was going to get overturned on review. I don't know how you guys felt about it in the box. They showed it, I mean, plenty of times on TV, and it wasn't clear to me if he had possession and was down before that thing squirted out, but it did hit the ground eventually. What were you guys thinking? Because I thought, well, that's going to be a turnover on downs. Carolina's going to have a chance to win this football game, Tom. I really thought that was going to be – I'd written down in my notes, great catch, but it's overturned on review, and then it's held up.
Yeah, I thought it was going to get overturned too. But Pete said, you know, you can tell him you had another view of it. Like it was kind of hard to see in the press box because the TVs were way up and my – usual screen that I bring with me, little TV, wasn't working very well. So I didn't get to see it, but I did see it hit the ground. I saw that part where it hit the ground. But Pete, you should describe what you saw when you watched it really closely.
So the first replay I saw just right after the play, you didn't see the ball come loose. And I'm like, oh, that's a catch. This will stand as a catch. Then they, you know, like a minute later, they showed a replay And I'm like, oh my God, that ball's sitting on the ground. That's not a catch. They're going to overturn this. And then after the game, I went back and looked at the replay really closely. And now I see what Walt Anderson, the official in New York who made the call, I see what he was saying, because the whole time, you got to look really closely. The whole time Dobbs had his left hand on the ball. So the ball hit the ground, but the ball can hit the ground as long as you still have control of it. And he had his left hand on the ball, and it looked like he was pinning it against his body, and he might have even had it like he was palming it. And you couldn't tell for sure. But the ball definitely hit the ground, but the ball wasn't just sitting on the ground like I thought it was when I watched the replay right after the play. So I can see why they thought it was inconclusive. I mean, it looked a little dicey, but you could not look at that and say for sure that he did not have that ball pinned against his side. Yeah. So I can see why, you know, that they didn't call it a good catch. They just said it couldn't be overturned. If the ball had been called incomplete, they would have probably let that stand too.
Tucker Kraft mentioned him already, but he tried to hurdle a guy for the second week in a row. That man is fearless, which is insane. Or might have been a little stupid, a little bit. But again, he has another big day. And, you know, we talked earlier in the week about Luke Musgrave possibly being back for the Vikings game. He's been designated to return. I don't know if he'll be quite ready, but they're going to try to get him back at some point here. With these two guys together, now that they've both like had their moments developed, Pete, do you think that are they going to be used at the same time? Are the Packers going to know what to do with them, to deploy them and make sure that they have, you know, their roles are etched perfectly? Because I think both of them have been really good without the other one kind of coexisting. And now we're going to see both of them kind of fully confident if they're both on the field at the same time.
Yeah, I think LaFleur really likes the tight end position, and his offense is designed to get a lot out of those guys. Now, if Musgrave comes back this week, you know, he's going to be rusty. I don't know how many snaps he would play. So, you know, they might play them together some, you know, who knows, but thinking more ahead, like to next season, I mean, those are two good, talented, pretty promising looking players. So I've got to think next year, there's going to be a lot of two tight end sets. And the thing is, they have, you know, some really interesting depth at receiver too. So it's going to be a battle for playing time at those five pass catching or four pass catching spots and a battle for targets. So this, you know, like, let's just say he plays this week, you know, who knows how much they'll play together. It could end up not being very much because Musgrave might not play a lot, mm-hmm. but thinking forward, they potentially have something really good going there. But Tom is right. I mean, Kraft has got to quit doing this hurdling or he's going to get himself killed. I mean, he's going to get hurt bad.
Yeah. Tom, I'm going to move to special teams because they had some interesting moments in this game. I want to start with the kicker. Anders Carlson is an interesting case. I mean, he obviously kicks the game-winning field goal. He kicks a 50-plus yarder, a really, you know, booming kick that was big early in the game. He also missed an extra point for the fourth time this season. Now he's hardly alone. Eddie Pinheiro, in fact, missing two of them really helped the Packers against Carolina. And you know, as I'm actually watching the Monday night game and watching another extra point being missed, this is not like completely unique to Anders Carlson, but how do you think the team evaluates him? Do they feel like he is still for sure the kicker of the future and he's going to take his lumps and you just do that in not a rebuilding season really anymore, but a season where they're kind of rediscovering who they are, or is there some concern still that he may not be the guy going forward? How do you look at him?
I think they feel pretty good about him. I don't think there's any reason they would give up on him. Not next year, for sure. They could bring someone in to challenge him, but I think they're pretty committed to him. I think you have to, on that extra point, you got to look at that snap. It was over high. Daniel Whelan's head. And Whelan's turned out to be a pretty good holder to be able to get snaps like that down. I think if there's anything, they need to look at the long snapper and try to get someone who's more consistent, because I've seen a lot of snaps all over the place. And, you know, a snap that high kind of can screw up your timing, you know, and if you don't, you know, Mason Crosby was a guy who just absolutely had to have everything right. I mean, he found ways to get it through the goalpost, but he was very demanding about wanting it just right. And I remember Ryan Longwell wanting the ball had to be exactly in a certain angle, or he was just like, no, I can't do it, you know? So I think that operation isn't great. I think it's an issue, and they got to figure that out.
Mason Crosby now with the New York Giants practice squad as of this week, and I think he's going to kick on Christmas Day, as people are probably listening to this, should be kicking, and maybe he'll kick against the Rams next week. That'll be a big game for the Packers, so that's a potential storyline. But Tom, what about the rest of the special teams? I know Rich Bisaccia is getting some heat too, at least in the Packers Twitter circles that I follow. In addition to Joe Barry,
you need to stay off of Twitter.
Oh no! That's where I live, Tom. Silverside. I love it there.
Stressful.
Of course it is, but I swim in it anyway. But there's the Lucas Van Ness penalty early on in the game. Ultimately, I think special teams was whatever. It was fine. It just had a couple. You know, it had that penalty, and then the botched kick early on. So there were some issues there, and I know they've had them over the course of the year. I thought it was interesting. Lucas Van Ness was rushing. On that particular punt, they had Carolina pinned pretty deep early in the game, and Lucas Van Ness was going after the punter. But I don't know. Otherwise, you've so great, or do you have any thoughts on how that unit did overall?
Yeah, I mean, people on the blog want to fire Bisaccia too, and I'm just like, yes. All right, you know, I mean, who don't you want to fire? You know, the special teams hasn't been great, but they don't do anything. They don't do as many things that just kill games like the old special teams did. You know, they don't fumble. They don't muff a lot of kicks. Their coverage is pretty darn good. They haven't been able to break Keyshawn Nixon this year. So, I mean, if you want to blame that on the coach, that's okay. The really interesting part about the Van Ness play, I talked to him about it, and he said he was told that because the guy didn't land, he didn't allow the guy to land. That's considered roughing as opposed to running into the kicker. And he came straight at him right underneath him. And, you know, but the more interesting part about that was they had Carolina kind of pinned back, and they saw, they were getting rushers in on that punter. And I got to look at the tape, but I think it was Van Ness again, because I asked them about it. And he's like, I definitely could have blocked that. But he was like, I held up because I didn't want to draw another penalty on that. So, you know, I think they had schemed pretty well against that punter. The problem was, you know, after that penalty, it just shut guys like Van Ness down. Like, I can't kill our team with a penalty. So, you know, I don't think their special teams is a disaster. I don't, you know, it could be better. It always could be better. But I think for the most part, they're solid.
Pete, I don't know what the injury situation, if there were any reports or any inklings about how things went in this game, but the big one for me is Dontavian Wicks leaving at halftime, came back to the sideline, and it looked like maybe he was going to get back in the game, but then went back to the locker room. I think that'd be a pretty big loss if he were down. Now, they didn't have him for the Detroit game, and they won anyway, so maybe it's not as dramatic a loss as I might think, but what, any news on him and or anyone else? How healthy did they, you know, did they come out of this game?
Yeah, if he can't go out or if he can't play, then, you know, maybe Reed or Watson will be back. Maybe both, even. Who knows? Tom talked to Wicks, and I think you said, Tom, that Wicks said he had x-rays and there was no broken bones. Is that right?
Correct. He said his ribs weren't broken. I said, I asked him, so you think you're good for Minnesota? And he said, well, let's see. Let's see how it goes in the next couple of days. So he wasn't committing. LaFleur kind of indicated it wasn't too serious either. I would guess, you know, he had that pretty, he had that sprained ankle against the Giants, and they thought he was going to be out for a while, and he came back and played the next week. So I think there's a chance he'll play. If they could get all three of those guys back, Reed has only been gone for 1 week, so that's not going to be a big deal. Watson's been out for almost a month, so that could be a little bit of rust there. But having those guys back, and if they can throw Musgrave back out there, you know, they don't have to play these guys 100 snaps. They just need to create some stresses against the Vikings defense and figure out how to play off that. You know, you're talking about, could they use Musgrave and Kraft together? Absolutely. Because if they've got those two guys in there, they're going to look and see, how is Minnesota going to play? What personnel are they going to play? Are they going to play their base personnel, or are they going to play nickel? If they're playing their base personnel against those two tight ends, then they go and split one of those guys out wide and make a linebacker go and cover them. You know, if they go with nickel, then they line those two guys up and they run the ball. So I think it's really, I think it is critical to have both those guys. I just don't know how good Musgrave will be right away and whether he can threaten them down the field. But, you know, the more guys you have who've done some decent things on the field, the more, you know, allusions to strengths you can create.
Pete, this question might sound crazy. I don't know. But I ask this because I was looking back at the history of Packers coaches since the team has really been good over the last three decades. You know, Mike Sherman was, or Ray Rhodes was given one season and was out. These are all very apples to orange comparisons. But Mike Sherman, they were good four straight years in the playoffs. And then as soon as he went bad, he was out. Ray Rhodes only got the 1 year. Mike McCarthy, they didn't give him a full second year, down year, so to speak. And he was gone. I certainly don't have any reason to think Matt LaFleur will be gone if they don't make the playoffs here. I really don't think there's any scenario, but I guess I'd be willing to be wrong, especially with the way the Joe Barry thing has gone and the way this defense has not improved down the home stretch. I think it's a triumph to be in this position with Jordan Love and as young a team as they have. But I know there's some discontent, at least in the Twitter circles that I roam in. So is there any chance
off of Twitter?
It's never going to happen. I love it there. It is. It is. And still, I enjoy it. Is there any chance Matt LaFleur is not back next year? Is there any inkling whatsoever?
You know, Nate, you know, Tom does the blog. I do the chats. I do a chat every Wednesday, and I get a ton of questions, and I get people asking, wanting him fired or asking if he might be. So if they had lost out these last three and it had been really, really bad, I've asked around with people who work in the organization who would know. The sense I get is they knew, Brian Gutekunst and Mark Murphy knew they were putting Matt LaFleur in a really tough spot this year by going so incredibly young at receiver and tight end. I mean, not that I would remember for sure in 30 years covering the league, but I just find it really hard to believe any team has had all the receivers were first and second year guys and their top two or three tight ends were rookies. Mm-hmm. That just doesn't happen. And then you got a new starting quarterback. So I think the GM and the team president knew they were putting LaFleur in a really tough spot. I think the only thing that could blow things up and possibly have cost LaFleur's job is if his relationship with those two guys somehow blew up. Now, really bad play and the Barry stuff theoretically could have led to that. But I mean, now they've won seven games. That's one game more. Tom and I were talking about this on the ride back to the hotel. In 15 games, they've won one more game than Aaron Rodgers won in 2008 in 16 games.
I bet Aaron Rodgers knows that.
Oh, I'm sure. I guarantee you he does. And as Tom pointed out in our conversation coming in, this guy has done it without as much experienced talent as Rodgers had back in 08. So I just think the chances of LaFleur getting fired are really close to zero. And it would be less, the only chance would be if things blow up between him and Gutekunst and Murphy. And I have, those things can happen. Those things are always possible, but it's really hard to see it happening, even with the Barry stuff. Now, if he doesn't make a defensive coordinator change in the offseason, that's a whole different ball game. But so no, JR, I don't think, I think the chance of LaFleur getting fired after this season, short of him not replacing Barry, are minuscule.
you got to also remember that. So Murphy hired him. This is Murphy's crowning jewel of his tenure, right? He didn't hire McCarthy. You know, he got a chance to hire Gutekunst. Then he got a chance to hire LaFleur. And so these are his guys. He's got, what, 2 years left before mm-hmm. he has to retire?
Year and a half, yeah.
Yeah, he's not gonna bail on these guys. This is his last chance to make a legacy, you know, some sort of mark on the organization. So he's not gonna like start over, you know, with a year to go on his tenure. He'll let the next guy make that decision.
All right, in my opinion. Yeah. All right, as we get, we can kind of land this plane here, give you guys maybe if there's anything else from this game that you want to zoom in on. I don't know, maybe the Josiah DeGuara fumble recovery, the big moment of the year for Josiah DeGuara, or anything else that jumped out. So, Tom, I'll start with you. If there's anything else that you wanted to point to in this Carolina win.
This is not really what happened in the game, but something to keep an eye on. You know, so Carrington Valentine didn't play. And I was kind of surprised about that. They played Corey Ballantyne ahead of Carrington Valentine in the dime. And I think it's because Ballantyne can play a little bit of slot and they don't think that Carrington Valentine was. But I was watching Carrington Valentine too, though, during parts of the game, and he was way off to the side. And I wonder if he was like not a happy camper, that his job was just taken out from under him. Now, he's got to know he plays behind Jair Alexander. And sorry, that's the way the NFL works, you know. But it'll be kind of interesting to watch what becomes of him and if they figure out a way to use him. I'm not sure where, but I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, we've talked. He's also a pretty emotional guy, and you talked about having Alexander back means fewer snaps for him, and that's too bad because he's made so much progress. But yeah, you could kind of see where that could go sideways. But again, like you said, he's a seventh round pick, and Jair Alexander's an All Pro. Like, there's no real comparison. Pete, how about you? Was there anything that jumped out to you?
I mean, you covered all the things that I thought were important. I'll just be really curious to see what the film shows. You know, I'll rewatch the game tomorrow and I'll talk with Eric Baranchek. You know, he's probably watching it as we're speaking right now. So I'll be really curious to see what he sees, you know, because there's so much you miss just watching the game live. You know, Anthony Johnson, I wonder how he played. He started in place of Rudy Ford. You know, will he be out there? It seemed like Sean Ryan might have had a few more snaps than in the previous few games. I'm not sure about that, but I thought I saw him out there for, I think, at least three series. So I'll be curious to see how he did and maybe if his playing time will pick up. Because Walker, I don't think Nyman played at all. I think Walker played the whole game at left tackle. So just things like that. I'll be really curious what the film reveals. And then Eric and I will have a column about that that'll post Tuesday morning.
And you can stay tuned to this feed. You'll hear Pete and Eric discuss discuss what they found on the After Further Review podcast that'll drop on Tuesday morning. You can find everything that Tom Silverstein and Pete Doherty have at PackersNews.com or JSOnline.com if you prefer in the Milwaukee area. They've got the full breakdown from Carolina. Next week, New Year's Eve with the Minnesota Vikings. They'll be it's a 7:30 tip time, the Sunday night football game. So as you're celebrating the end of 2023, the Packers playoff hopes will linger until at least the final moments of 2023. So that is a positive if you were thinking back to the start of the season to now. We'll see if it lasts into 2024. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me on this edition of the 319 podcast. We will chat again very soon. Take travels home. See you soon.